Moramai. Good morning. I'm Judith Lay and this is Praise, the programme that connects faith and daily life. Manx Radio. Today's programme is full of contrasts. We've advice on happy relationships. We hear what it's really like to care for people who've been bereaved in the most cruel of ways. And Michael from Kenya has an inspiring story to share. And our opening hymn today is chosen with Valentine's Day in mind. It's still one of the most popular choices at weddings. Love Divine or Love's Excelling. Huddersfield Choral Society with Love Divine or Love's Excelling, still one of the most popular choices for wedding ceremonies. And on the subject of love and romance, where better to turn for relationship advice than to couples who've all been married for over 50 years? In the case of Brenda and Harold, for nearly 64 years.
Hi there, I'm Brenda. I've been married to Harold for over 63 years and we're still going strong.
The love that we have is very, very hard to express in words. Brenda understands me so well. She looks after me and feeds me well too.
He has some funny little ways. I'm tolerant, but that makes it more interesting, doesn't it? I took him for better, for worse, in sickness and in health, and that's what I've tried to do.
I try to show my love for my wife just by obeying her instantly and generally laughing together.
Hug him at times, kiss him at times.
She might give me a kiss now and then and we might laugh a bit.
Well, he doesn't make a fuss about little things. He's got a great phrase that his mother gave him. She used to say, never make a first-class row over a second-class matter.
I always have the last word, even if it's only yes, dear.
A mix of good sense and good humour from couples wise enough to know that there's more to a solid relationship than the giving of cards and flowers. And that's something that our Ireland Christian Aid representative, Louise Whiteleg, feels very strongly about. Louise has been in Nobles Hospital for the last couple of weeks. And Louise, we send you the promise of our prayers as you now wait at home to be sent across for some further treatment. But Louise's passion for her work clearly isn't affected one bit by her current health problems. And she's emailed us suggesting that rather than making Valentine's Day a riot of plastic hearts, teddy bears and calories, that we show our real love by going green rather than red and making even more effort to reduce our individual carbon footprint. Louise says, how about making and displaying green hearts somewhere in our community? Cut them out of paper or card or paint stones and write a message of love on them. And on this green Valentine's Day, what would we be showing our love for? We'd be showing our love for our planet, for God's creation, for future security for our children and grandchildren. Louise points us towards a website, theclimatecoalition.org. You can spin a virtual wheel on the screen and up comes a suggestion of a small thing to do which collectively will bring about the big changes that we all want. There are some obvious ones like make a personal effort to cut down on our own use of plastics and buy more locally produced food. But I particularly like the suggestion that it came up with for me. Love food, hate waste. And there on the screen were lots of delicious recipes, all suitable for absolute beginners and taking no more than 10 minutes to prepare, using ingredients that I might otherwise be tempted to throw away, like stale bread and leftover potatoes and vegetables. It's well worth a look. TheClimateCoalition.org. And so from love to loss. How is it even possible to begin to minister to people who've lost loved ones in the most tragic of circumstances? I had the opportunity to put that question to Bishop Tom Williams when he visited the island briefly last weekend. Bishop Tom is an auxiliary bishop in the Roman Catholic Archdiocese of Liverpool, of which the Catholic Church on the island forms a part. The reason for Bishop Tom's flying visit is something that we'll talk about on a future programme. But today we're talking about ministering in the most unthinkable situations. Thomas Williams was born and grew up in inner city Liverpool, close to the docks where his father worked. In 1972 he was ordained priest in the city's Roman Catholic Cathedral, and in the years that followed much of his priestly ministry was in parishes in and around the town centre, including serving for over 9 years as chaplain to both the old and the new Royal Liverpool Hospitals. Father Tom was consecrated bishop in 2003, and since then he's been based in the city's Cathedral of Christ the King, working alongside the Archbishop with a ministry that covers the whole Roman Catholic Archdiocese of Liverpool. But in 1989, Bishop Tom was still Father Tom, parish priest of two neighbouring Liverpool churches, with both Liverpool and Everton football grounds within his parish, giving him plenty to discuss with his parishioners, particularly the ones who, like him, were devoted Evertonians. But on the 15th of April 1989, that ministry placed him at the centre of the worst disaster in British sporting history, the Hillsborough tragedy, with 96 fatalities. As we approach the 30th anniversary of that fateful day, it's clear that the memories are just as painful for Bishop Tom Williams.
It was a difficult time, really, in the sense that nobody knew what to do. I remember going with the local vicar, David Godson. He said, let's go round all the various places that night just to speak to people. And we went to the various pubs together. Then we went to the Orange Hall and he wouldn't let me in. And he said, well, if he's not coming in, he said, I'm not coming in. And that sort of set a precedent for many other things, because it was about something that belonged to the whole city. It was a watershed in many ways for a lot of things. And you just dealt with things as they came along.
And there was the injustice of it as well, wasn't there?
Well, the injustice was what the whole city felt in terms of the way it was dealt with by the press in particular, or the national press, not the local press. The problem really was the national press. But that was something else. That people knew what was going on. They knew what had happened. I think the other thing was, it was something where, I mean, as an Everton supporter, we always thought therefore, but for the grace of God went us. It was a situation out of everyone's control that was in another city. But the injustice was in the sense of how do you deal with this? So I remember going to many of the funerals. In fact, I led two of the funerals because I knew the people. Some of them I used to go to the match with. But you just dealt with the families. All the rest of the other things went over everyone's head. I remember on the night of the Hillsborough, I was saying 6 o'clock Mass in Our Lady Immaculate's, and the news was still coming through, filtering through, of what had happened. We knew one or two had died at that time. I remember two children turned up, one in an Everton kit and one in a Liverpool kit, and I brought them to the front of the altar and said, you know, this is what football is really all about. I remember there was a journalist at the back and he quoted it in The Independent. I was always pleased that many years later at the anniversary, they had a wonderful photograph of two children in the kit holding hands, because it was one city, it was one problem, and it was about dealing with grief rather than dealing with football situations. Because I think Liverpool is a particular place for dealing with tragedy. People cared and people supported one another and lifted them up. Personally, I never realised the trauma of the whole event until about 20 years later. I remember being absolutely, well, really traumatised myself by seeing the name, the pictures of the 96 in the town hall when they all got the freedom of the city. And what struck me was that I knew a lot of the faces, and the impact of it hadn't really hit me for 20 years. And I think that's the same with a lot of people, the impact of it, the fallout of it. Because there was one element of saying, well, it's over and done with now, you know, get on with it. The injustice then came about the way, as though it had been, you know, the blame was all one side. I don't think you should blame anyone in some ways. I mean, I think we say that circumstances took over. The main aim is that something like that never happens again, and it's about protection. I'm not into the blame game. Justice has already been served. Even the people who are being charged have put their hands up and said, we got it wrong. We support the people who go there and who want justice. I personally think that forgiveness has got to come in somewhere, and understanding and right judgment.
Something else you've been involved in for a considerable number of years is an ecumenical service for people who have been affected by murder and manslaughter. Yes. How did that come into being, Bishop?
That came into being when a couple whose daughter was murdered just outside Liverpool, they decided to organise a gathering. They got the police involved and the local coroner and the Radio Merseyside were involved. And it was an event that took place in our cathedral each year. They organised it. The victim support groups. A lad called Steve Williams, an Anglican vicar, was part of it, part of Radio Merseyside. And Linda McDermott was there, and the coroner and the police chief. Now, I got involved about 15 years ago because I was in our cathedral when I became a bishop. And I actually knew a lot of the people, I'd met many of them, because I was hospital chaplain. I was from inner city Liverpool, and I knew, I'd done many of the funerals myself. And when the drug wars were taking place, I knew many of the families. So it's at Christmas. They read the names out. This year they read out about 450 names. It covers about a 10-year period. But what is interesting is the people who come, you know, you get the travellers come and various different groups. You can only judge that they get something out of it. People tend to come over a period of about 10 years and then sometimes they'll say, well, I don't need to come anymore, because they're still grieving in many ways. There was one woman, I remember, whose son was murdered outside of the school gates by another pupil many years ago now. She'd been coping extremely well, and it must have been 10 years later, and she came up and she said, I can't come this year. I said, why not? She said, they just released the lad out of jail. She said, you've got to realise that this is something that continues, especially the victims of murder and manslaughter. So there's many, many layers that you have to peel back. So I think all we do is try and give them a voice, so they will want to say a prayer, some beautiful poetry has come out of it. And there's always, hopefully, an element of hope there. But it's about support mechanisms among themselves. Ken Dard used to come. He came about 7 or 8 years ago, first of all. He would come and he'd sing very seriously. And he was just supporting people, Christmas before last. In fact, about a few months before he died. We were at the back. He walked in with his wife-to-be, 90 years of age, and said, can I say something at the end? So I said, of course you can, you know. And the service lasted about an hour and a half. He came up onto the altar and said, I know why you're here, but you don't know why I'm here. And he said, well, I'm not going to tell you, he said, the reason. He said, but I know that I've been really low and depressed. And I'm beginning to glimmer where you've been. He then told a story of how he was coping with it. And he said, I sat in the downtown cathedral and a stranger comes over, asks me how I am. And I said, not very well. He said, do you mind if we talk? He said, and this turned out to be a retired priest. I don't know who it was. And we talked. And he said to me, I think what you need to do, Ken, is pray. He said, and we talked that through. He said, so I'm saying to you, pray. Ask the Lord to help you. And it works. And the entire congregation stood up and applauded. Well, it's got to be prayer. I mean, basically, what are we as church? Our Lord's disciples said, Lord, teach us how to pray. He taught the Lord's Prayer. It's also about everything he did in his preaching and his ministry was about prayer, understanding God in our lives.
Bishop Tom Williams, Auxiliary Bishop in the Roman Catholic Archdiocese of Liverpool, talking there about the realities of ministry at some of the most painful times of loss. And the music is part of the Lord's Prayer from African Sanctus. African Sanctus includes traditional African music, which the composer David Fanshawe recorded in the early 1970s during a journey up the Nile, and includes recordings made in Uganda and Kenya, which links us to my final guest today, who's going to be a big encouragement to you if you're involved in or interested in ministry to children using puppets. Michael Mwanika is from Kenya, where he's director of Children Worldwide Kenya, and he's married to Irene, who is from Uganda. They have four children of their own and have fostered two teenagers, giving him plenty of first-hand knowledge for his children's ministry. How, I wondered, did this all begin?
God called me into children's ministry when I had finished Bible college. It was not very easy. Actually, it's been a long, long way.
Michael didn't have the easiest start in life. He was born when his mother was just 15, and when Michael was 6 weeks old, she left home, leaving her baby son in the care of his grandmother. He was eventually brought up in the home of his maternal uncle, but without any real Christian teaching. But all that changed when Michael was 9 years old and missionaries arrived with puppets. The first ones that young Michael saw were Adam and Eve and the snake.
Missionaries came to our country in our small area with the puppets. And so Adam, Eve and Snake as puppets. At age 9, I began going to church. So I've grown up as a Christian from a non-Christian family background. From there, I grew up, I finished primary school, and my uncles did not take me to high school. They said, okay, you're finished. And we had some tribal things, cultural things that did not allow me to go to high school.
So, with his family unable to help him further his education, Michael took his primary school results to his church, hoping that the church members would help him. They said they couldn't, but instead encouraged him to preach in house fellowship groups. But Michael never gave up on his dream of going to Bible college.
But in my heart, I felt like I needed to be sharpened. There I received a grant to continue with my studies. I finished Bible college. I have a diploma in Bible theology to minister to adults, not children.
But even though Michael was absolutely sure that God was calling him into ministry with children, not adults, there were more obstacles in his way, even from church leaders who couldn't understand why Michael didn't use his theology qualification to work as a pastor to adults, where he would be supported financially by the church members. But Michael had another plan.
Oh, I have a bicycle. In Kenya, we use bicycles as taxis. You can carry one person on a bicycle. So we carry people and they give us money. So I said, I'll do that and feed my family as I serve the Lord. And faithfully, that's what I've done.
Where were those children and what were you doing?
In Kenya, half of the population of Kenya is up for age 15 and below. So Kenya has a lot of potential to minister to children. And that is a huge opportunity for us to serve the children. So children are found in primary schools, children are found in high schools, children are found in churches, children are found even on our own streets. You just go with a puppet there, children will come. You just stand in the church, children will come. Children go to church and they have no one to minister to. But children, they can grow and believe in Jesus, and we can develop them in the faith of Jesus Christ. I think that's why God wanted me to go to Bible college, to get informed and bring that theology in a very simplified way. I don't think Jesus was never complicated. Jesus was very simple. I am the way. It's very easy to understand. He never said, I am the M25. I am the way. Now, you think about the way. It's very easy to explain something like that. I am the truth and I am the life. Children, they don't need a very complicated theology. I've done this as a trained minister from 2004.
Michael's wife, Irene, has always been a part of his ministry to children, and as well as working in schools and churches, they've helped local groups to run children's holiday clubs. And that was where they met Dave Gidney, a member of Children Worldwide, who'd come to Kenya from the UK to also help to run holiday clubs. Established in the UK over 30 years ago, Children Worldwide is a not-for-profit organisation bringing together those who work with children and families to share experiences and resources, encourage one another and ensure best practice at all times. Dave was surprised that Michael and Irene were effectively working alone with no real prayer support for their ministry. So Children Worldwide Kenya was born, bringing Michael's work in Kenya under the umbrella of Children Worldwide. And if you'd like to know more about the work of Children Worldwide, you can find lots of information on their website, childrenworldwide, all one word, .org.uk. And they're on Facebook too. Go to facebook.com and search for Children Worldwide.
Make me a tunnel of your peace.
Consoled us to console.
Another very popular hymn, the words of St. Francis of Assisi, Make Me a Channel of Your Peace, sung there by the choir of Wallingford Parish Church in Oxfordshire. Thank you for listening to this week's Praise podcast. There's a new podcast available every Sunday morning. You can subscribe for free on iTunes, Google Podcasts and Spotify via the Manx Radio smartphone app or at manxradio.com. And don't forget to take a look at the Praise blog, the home of our notice board, full of information about church services and events. Go to manxradio.com, on the homepage, click on air, and on the drop-down menu, you'll see the link for blogs, just above the one for podcasts. So until we meet again, this is Judith saying thank you for your company, and I wish you and those you love every blessing in the days ahead.